Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Yeah, it's his best opportunity to win here and now in this season. But Aaron Rodgers, probably giving the Packers a win that they did not expect to get quite this easily at the end of this process here. It's Jhené and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin, our ESPN Vikings reporter, hanging out with us again here. And Courtney, it's got to be an interesting feeling. We're talking so much about Aaron Rodgers coming back with the Green Bay Packers, and we've talked to you today. You've been out at the Vikings facility, and I'm sure that they're all completely unbothered by this news of the return of one of the best players in the NFL to their division rival.
I think everybody in the NFC North really thought that they were going to get away with a miracle here and not see Aaron Rodgers report today and things all fall apart in Green Bay, and maybe they'll have a chance to switch up who's going to win the division and all the odds on that. Mike Zimmer, Vikings head coach, was talking about it. He said he'd kept just a little bit of an eye on the situation that was unfolding in Green Bay as everybody around the NFL world was wondering what the heck was actually going to happen. And we've got people tracking flights and people on the ground and in high-angle camera shots of Aaron Rodgers wearing a shirt with Kevin from The Office. And I don't know, are those rainbows? Are those reefs? What kind of sandals was he wearing? There are a lot of details coming out of Green Bay today, Mike, that I think a lot of people are very interested in. But nonetheless, Aaron Rodgers is in Green Bay. At least that settles one very big question mark for the Packers entering training camp.
Yeah, we've had a lot of dominoes in play this NFL offseason, and it seems like for the most part they've stood pat. So we'll give you the winners in that situation coming up in a little bit here, and we'll certainly dive into more as NFL training camps are starting to open up right now. We're seeing the conversation go to a lot of the places that we certainly expected here, with some coaches airing frustrations about their teams, vaccination rates, all the above, but Courtney, it's hard to ignore what seems like the chief news of the day. With the Olympics being on at the hours they are at certain points, I've been out on the West Coast, and so I've gotten used to waking up to a lot of whatever's gone on in the games. And this morning, it was impossible to avoid the news out of Tokyo that Simone Biles, the all-everything, one of the biggest brands, athletes, names in this Olympic Games, had bowed out of the team women's gymnastics finals on Tuesday night, citing issues with mental health, citing a lack of confidence, and just the difficulty of being able to go on in that moment, pulled herself out of that team competition that ultimately wound up with Team USA taking silver in that event. And Courtney, it's launched this larger discussion around this. This seems to be back in one of those spots where, as mental health comes up again around the world of athletes, and this time you've got one of the biggest athletes on the planet on the biggest stage pulling herself out of competition because she did not feel like she was in a place where she could compete at the level she was used to. It feels like another opportunity for us to try and figure out how we talk about this in a way that's constructive and in a way that continues to advance forward. Because Courtney, I don't know about you, I myself have to fight a lot of the feelings around this as we talk about mental health, something we have accepted as a good. When it gets to a moment like this, where it's in the heat of competition and it's in one of the biggest moments on earth in a team setting here, I have to fight some of those old feelings that were instilled in me as a young athlete of pushing on through those, of going out there and putting the team before self and all these things, to remind myself that we're at a place where we know a little bit more now. And so there's room to discuss how athletes can go about dictating what happens to their bodies in a spot like this.
Yeah, I'm glad we have a three-hour show today because there is so much to get into here and so many layers. And I encourage anybody who hasn't read the New York Times article from a couple days ago about Simone Biles and the weight of perfection to go read it, because I'm going to read you a quote. When we're talking about mental health and all the struggles that people go through and someone, the GOAT herself, has dealt with, this gutted me when I read this morning. Quote, in the weeks and months afterwards, this is dating back to a previous interview that she had done and in previous things, quote, Simone fell into a deep depression and slept a lot because, as she told Vogue magazine last year, quote, it was the closest thing to death without harming myself. She felt she had let down her fans because America wanted her to be perfect. Therapy helped, she told the New York Times, and she would publicly encourage others to get help if they were struggling. This isn't something that she just pulled out as an excuse of falling off the vault and not being able to do her Yurchenko and be the GOAT Simone Biles that we have known her to become. This is a well-documented thing that she has dealt with for a long time now. And I think that we see this unfold on the biggest stage in the world, in the Olympics. She showed everyone today that it's okay to struggle and it's okay to not be perfect, even when perfection's expected, because this is somebody who's had the weight of the entire Olympics, not just gymnastics. She's the face of the Olympic Games. And even she has issues, and she has struggles. And like you mentioned there, I mean, there's a chance, too. If you're not in the right headspace doing what she's doing, you're going to put yourself at risk of getting seriously injured. And a lot of people have a lot of thoughts on why she withdrew today. I think that this might have been the smartest thing for her because she just was clearly not in the right headspace to compete.
Yeah, this was Simone Biles, again, U.S. Olympic legend, talking about it at the press conference after why she exited the Games.
If you could sort of tell us, was there any injury? That was one thing we wanted to know. And if you can elaborate on maybe the stress you've been feeling. We all know when you're in the spotlight, we can imagine what it's like.
No injury, thankfully. And that's why I took a step back, because I didn't want to do something silly out there and get injured. So I thought it was best if these girls took over and did the rest of the job, which they absolutely did. They're Olympic silver medalists now, and they should be really proud of themselves for how well they did last minute having to go in. And it's been really stressful, this Olympic Games, I think, just as a whole, not having an audience. There are a lot of different variables going into it. It's been a long week. It's been a long Olympic process. It's been a long year. So just a lot of different variables, and I think we're just a little bit too stressed out. But we should be out here having fun, and sometimes that's not the case.
It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless here on Shenane Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Here's a little follow-up, because I want to get in how she arrived at the decision here. She elaborated on that as well.
Today has been really stressful. We had a workout this morning. It went okay, and then just that 5.5-hour wait or something, I was just like shaking, could barely nap. I've just never felt like this going into a competition before, and I tried to go out here and have fun and warm up in the back, went a little bit better, but then once I came out here, I was like, no, mental is not there, so I just need to let the girls do it and focus on myself.
And that's Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Courtney, I can understand some people, old school sports fans, not being sure how to process this, because it is very different, like what we've seen in these changes. But I think there's a few things. I don't think it's a coincidence that this has happened. We saw this happen, a conversation with Naomi Osaka, another young star at the top of her game, with the pressures that come on right now. It's not that athletes in years past and decades past haven't had a lot of pressure, but it's different now. There's more access. There's more built up around it. It's a different level of exposure. It might not be more or less, but it's certainly different. It's more invasive in a lot of ways. And then number two, there is what you mentioned, the threat of physical harm. We've seen this happen in the sport of football, where you've got players retiring younger than normal, where you've had players that decide, hey, I've got a lot of money, I've made a lot of money, I've been very fortunate to have success in all this, and I understand what the long-term ramifications could be of this violence, and choosing to bow out long before some of their predecessors would have. This has been kind of a paradigm shift that's gone on in a lot of sports. And this seems to be a spot where Simone Biles, who is known for aggressively targeting skills that most other people would not try, most other women are not going after in competition, and so only she's going to know what she needs to be able to complete that. And if you're not ready to go, I mean, I look all the time just as a novice looking at this, Courtney, and say, I don't know how you avoid catastrophic injury on some of the skills that they're going after here.
I mean, she's been talking about it for weeks that, you know, her ankles, every single step she takes, she feels that her body, in a way, is kind of breaking down here. And again, I'm going to reference that New York Times article. Like, she was asked about like one of her greatest moments, and it was the rest that she was able to get from gymnastics. So it kind of shows you where she's at mentally, that I almost think that she's kind of teetering that edge of burnout. And there are going to be the people who say, well, she's wearing the GOAT on her leotard, and she signed up for this, and she's relishing in the fact that people consider her the greatest gymnast of all time. That doesn't mean that she can't have an off day. That doesn't mean she can't struggle with mental health or the anxiety of competing. You heard in that clip that this was the first time that something didn't feel right. I mean, the girl's been through countless competitions throughout her entire 20-plus years here on Earth. And this one felt really different. It's not just that it's the Olympics. I mean, she's dealing with a lot of stuff right now. And if you go out there and you're like a nanosecond of, or you know, a nano inch off of where you need to be, you could get yourself seriously hurt. You could paralyze yourself. This is gymnastics we're talking about. It's people doing flips up in the air and things that are not physically possible for you and I and most everybody else in the world. There's a reason that they call one of her moves the Biles, because she's the only one in the world who can do it. And I just think that we have to kind of take this into a greater context of sports and the whole notion that we just have to push through, just keep fighting, you know, finish lines in sight, et cetera, et cetera. That rhetoric means something, but it also has to be taken a look into the whole picture here, because, you know, what she did for herself and to save Team USA, I mean, I think what she did was a very selfless thing. I know there's going to be people who say, oh, she bowed out at the peak of competition. I don't see it that way. She saw an opportunity where she could seriously hurt the rest of her team and honestly the standings. And yes, they finished silver. I don't think it was a selfish thing for her to do by any stretch. What happened today?
No, and like you said, there are going to be a lot of opinions on this, but we want to get to more of the facts, more of the information surrounding this. So coming up next, we'll talk to someone who's very well-versed in what goes on around Olympic gymnastics, what Simone Biles and this team have been through, and what got us to this moment. We'll do that next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Chanan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Courtney Cronin filling in for Chanan Agwumike today. And the top story around the world of sports, Courtney, no doubt has been Simone Biles making her decision to bow out of the women's gymnastics team event that ended with the women's team taking home a silver medal there. She cited her mental health not feeling quite 100% there. And, Courtney, you're getting ready to cover Vikings training camp right now. You cover a gladiator sport. For you, because so much of this comes back to the overall mental health conversation that we're having in sports right now, a generation of athletes who have started to look at this entire process different than the people that we all grew up watching. So I'm just curious, from what you've seen and from what you've heard from players over the years around the NFL, have you seen this kind of take shape in that league, another sport where, like gymnastics, where the outcome can be catastrophic if you're not careful? Football's always been the same way.
Yeah, I think it's such a it was considered such a volatile subject to breach or to broach just even a couple of years ago. I mean, we dealt with it here in Minnesota back during the 2018 season, and I think that was kind of not a wake up call, but it was just kind of everyone's first real experience reporting on it and covering it here, at least in a locker room. And it's we need to stop calling it a sensitive subject. It's something that we're all dealing with, and it's an everyday type thing where it's not this anomaly of, oh, it's this lower of mental health. Like, no, it's a very real thing. I mean, the greatest gymnast of all time is dealing with it.
It is true. And we've seen in the past, I mean, one of the greatest Olympians of all time, and Michael Phelps, dealt with some things of this nature after his time. And I think we only get better at talking about it if we get better and we talk about it more, because mental health has been this blanket term, but I think we're going to, in time, get better at talking with this the way we talk about physical injuries. And for more on this situation, everything surrounding Simone Biles' exit from this event, we head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to ESPN senior writer Alyssa Ronick, who has a great piece on .com about this decision that Simone made. Alyssa, we appreciate you giving us some time. How are you?
I'm I'm good. A little bleary-eyed. Been up. I'm not sure how many hours straight now, but yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, totally can understand that. I'm sure it's been a whirlwind, not only dealing with the time difference, but trying to cover this. So, Alyssa, when you saw this decision first made, when you saw Simone Biles exit competition here, what was running through your mind then?
Well, even before she made the decision, you know, seeing Simone in real time, you know, get what she would call the twisties, or, you know, a gymnast might call the twisties, or, you know, lose her air awareness, lose where she is in space in the middle of a vault. You know, if there's anything Simone's known for, it is her technical superiority and her incredible air awareness. So you knew something was going wrong. Something was going very wrong mentally with her this morning. And so that was sort of the first thing. And then, you know, I think the key word you just used is decision, you know, and it was a choice. And this is not a sport where athletes prior to this Olympiad believed they had a voice or a choice or agency over their own decision making. And so that, to me, was really powerful. You know, I cannot imagine how difficult it was for her. It seems she knew something was off throughout the day. She talked about, you know, shaking all day. She struggled in the warm up. She couldn't nap. She just did not feel like herself, but she's used to being able to push it all down, push through it and be extraordinary. And she couldn't, you know, we're all lucky that she has such great air awareness. She was able to turn what could have been a very bad moment into, you know, a different vault and run out of it and not end up injured. But to see her make what I think was a very important choice is not something we would have seen 4 years ago.
Alyssa, what exactly happened on the vault and what Simone Biles had planned to do versus what actually panned out?
Yeah, so the vault she was planning to do was a Yurchenko 2.5. And, you know, watching the vault in slow motion is terrifying because there's a moment where you see her sort of look over her shoulder and lose where she is. And she had the wherewithal to stop her rotation to do a 1.5 instead. She lands, you know, badly. She lands really low. She takes a step and sort of runs out of the vault. But, you know, we have never, you know, I can't think of a time we've ever seen Simone do that. I mean, certainly in the gym, you see a gymnast, you know, have that mental block where your brain is not connecting with your body. But, you know, when it's for the past 8 years, you know, when she is on the biggest stage, you know, she is able to, you know, fix whatever is going wrong and be great. And so once that happened, you could see the look on her face, saw the look on her teammates' faces, on her coaches' faces. She sat down, you saw the team doctor speaking with her, and you saw her keep shaking her head saying, I'm fine. And then at some point, Cecile, her coach, and the doctor walked her out of the arena and, you know, sort of took her into a timeout. And I think at that point she realized, I am not in a headspace. And I mean, I cannot stress enough how difficult and dangerous what Simone is doing. If she continued with that mindset, as shaken as she was, you know, that could have been catastrophic.
Talking to Alyssa Roenick here, ESPN senior writer, covering the Olympics for us here on Chinay and Golic Jr. And Alyssa, have we seen or heard reaction from her teammates on this front? Because those who have been detractors of Simone have talked about the team setting, have talked about her not being there in that moment for them. But I'm curious what, if anything, we've heard from her actual teammates who saw this from someone that they know so well and I'm sure care about very much.
Yeah, you know, I will say that take, I've seen that take, and it makes me angry. You know, the idea that she was not there for her teammates, you know, in her mind, you know, I have to say also one thing that I've seen that I want to just clear up is that once they all competed in prelims, there was no opportunity for her to say, hey, I'm going to bow out and put an alternate in. That was not an option. So she knew she had to try and give this her best and see what she could do. And I think she believed she would be able to push through it. And when she couldn't, besides her fear that she, you know, something terrible could happen, that she could be injured, there was also a fear that she talked about that she would be, instead of the anchor and you know, the member of the team who, you know, elevates their scores, that she would continue to do what she did on vault and she would hurt the team by competing. And she looked over and you have number 2, 3, and 4 in the country in the all around competing with her. And so she looked at her teammates and said, you guys can do this. And then it's not like she left the arena. She, you know, I can't imagine the disappointment, knowing Simone, she was incredibly disappointed in herself, but she hid that away. She put on a smile and she coached her teammates. She cheered them on. She was running the chalk box to them between rotations on uneven bars. I mean, she really was everything her teammates needed once she realized she could not compete. And her teammates said, I mean, Jordan Chiles said afterwards, we won this for her. We did this because of her. Most of us, Jordan especially, would not be here if not for her support and guidance. You know, she brought Jordan to her gym when Jordan was ready to quit the sport. You know, what Simone has meant to the sport and to her teammates goes so far beyond just that couple of hours on Sunday morning, Tuesday morning.
Alyssa,
every day it is.
Yeah. No, totally understandable, Alyssa. You've been working really hard on covering all of this and done a phenomenal job. We appreciate you giving us some time. We know it's got to be very tiring right now. So thank you so much and best of luck with everything coming up here. Hope you get some sleep soon.
Thank you guys so much.
Awesome stuff from Melissa Roenick. Again, our ESPN senior writer. You can read her on ESPN.com. We'll be back with more on NFL training camps in a minute here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Today in Golic Jr., the podcast.
From the end of the season through the NFL draft all the way up to training camp, Aaron Rodgers has been the one name that's coming out of everybody's mouth at one point or another. Will he or won't he? What's the issue with him and the Green Bay Packers? And it's gone. Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin, our ESPN Vikings reporter, filling in for Chinay Agwumike today. And Courtney, I'd imagine that as you guys are getting ready for Vikings training camp to get going around the facility there, I don't know if anyone was excited to see anyone come as excited to see anyone coming into that building as Packers fans probably were to see Aaron Rodgers reporting on time to training camp, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think that this is the best arrival probably ever. I mean, you've got players arriving in the Batmobile slingshot. You've got guys coming in via helicopter, hot air balloons, Brinks truck. I mean, I'm trying to think of the famous ones over the years. Aaron Rodgers just casually strolls up wearing shorts and a t-shirt and still can't figure out reefs or rainbows. Would love to know. And that, to me, it was such a all these months of speculation and all the reporting and all the, you know, stuff that was going on and the he said, and all of this kind of just a collective temporary sigh of relief. He's there. He's in the building. He is going to be the Packers quarterback in 2021. And to me, I think that Packers fans can be really happy for right now. But, you know, if after all of this that happened since the draft, since that story broke that he wanted out, the Packers have to win this year. If you're Aaron Rodgers, if you're anybody within that organization, you have to follow through with this because otherwise there's going to be a lot of discourse if they don't get to the NFC Championship game, if they don't win after all of this distraction came out this offseason.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting part of this, Courtney, is how this plays now that he's back, because this is a team back-to-back NFC Championship appearances, back-to-back, I believe, was it 13 and 3 regular season records? So this has been a team that's accomplished at a high level. And I look at this situation because I've seen, I remember I was in New Orleans in the offseason program there when Jimmy Graham was going through the arbitration hearings relative to his franchise tag and if he was a receiver or a tight end. And I remember seeing so much conversation around that from the outside world. And inside, it was, all right, this is a player handling a money issue. And the general rule of thumb in locker rooms, as you well know, is most guys aren't going to get involved when it's somebody else's cash because everyone knows that can eventually be them. But, Courtney, for this, for Aaron Rodgers in an issue that we heard over and over again wasn't about the money here, do you think he walks back in and everything's forgiven at this point?
I don't, and I know that there will be some people who say, oh, athletes can just, you know, if it's, you know, if it's our guy, we understand his reasoning and we have his back, but I just think that this is not going to necessarily be as easy of a cakewalk for the Green Bay Packers simply because they have number 12 back under center for them. I honestly think that there's going to be, I wouldn't say resentment being harbored by some on this 53-man roster, but certainly a big divide in the building. I wonder how that's going to play with the coaching staff, too. I always kind of felt like Matt LaFleur was caught in the middle of this whole thing between Rodgers and the front office. And how is that going to play out? I mean, because it's not that all's been forgiven and we're just going to sweep this under the rug and act like it didn't happen. This happened. It was a really big thing. It was the only thing we talked about for like 4 months on ESPN Radio, on ESPN the TV, on ESPN Plus, what have you. It's literally driven the entire dialogue of the offseason. So how do we move forward from this? I'm really curious to see what the next 4 or 5 days, once the team starts practicing tomorrow, once they get in pads, what this looks like with Aaron Rodgers commanding this offense, what Jordan Love looks like back in his role as QB2 potentially, and how do they honestly, like, where do they go from here? I truly have no idea other than they have to win this year. They absolutely have to win.
Yeah, and Courtney, I am in the camp that thinks that from the football side of things, this will be a more normal assimilation. Like, he's not the first veteran quarterback to miss the offseason program. He's going to be here on time for training camp. And we saw David Bakhtiari joking on Twitter with Ian Rappaport about how he was disappointed that he wasn't considered someone close to Aaron Rodgers. So I feel like there might be more people on that team laughing about this behind the scenes and how seriously we took this all than we're probably ever going to know for sure. But I think you mentioned two things I'm really interested in is, one, the long-term effect on Jordan Love, because this timeline still quietly looks like one the Packers would have signed up for, meaning one more year of Aaron Rodgers before they get into the Jordan Love version of this entire ordeal. But then the other is that pressure of, all right, now, for Matt LaFleur, who very much along the way tried to make it clear he supported Aaron Rodgers, because Matt LaFleur is not dumb. He knows why he looked like such a good coach through the first couple of years, and it had a lot to do with 12. But that pressure of everyone knowing, we got 1 year left of this, how does that really start to play in all of this? So we will get to all that. Aaron Rodgers arriving at Packers camp is breaking moves.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
I do want to give Adam Schefter some credit, though, because, Courtney, you mentioned how much we have talked about this throughout the past couple of months. It's been largely driven by the reporting of Adam Schefter, who deserves, I mean, probably free food for life in the ESPN cafeteria when he comes back on campus, at the very least, for carrying us all. But he made sure that in that victory lap on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning, he was also going to get some of his stand-up routine tried out. Listen to this.
I think Aaron Rodgers just wanted to be shown the love. And I don't mean Jordan Love when the Packers selected him. Just wanted to be shown some love.
Courtney, how long do you think he's had that one in the drafts?
Oh, I'm sure Adam's been sitting on that one for a while. That's a good one.
Hey,
I got to give it to him. It's a good
trots
one.
Trots that out at the dinner table in front of his kids, trying to make sure. See, running by his daughter, who's probably going to be taking all of our jobs here sooner than later with how good
exactly.
She's already been as a young woman. So, awesome stuff from Adam Schefter. But Aaron Rodgers back in Green Bay Packers training camp right now. We will see if there's any lingering effect from this offseason or if it was really just much ado about nothing that filled our airwaves. But coming up next, something that has already gotten a lot of teeth a lot sooner than most people anticipated. Texas and Oklahoma made a definitive statement that we'll read you today next here on ESPN Radio.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Oklahoma and Texas moving to the SEC, that's widely expected at this point.
If you're some of these other conferences, do you kind of band together and say, hey, we'll figure out how to govern ourselves and do away with the NCAA?
As Courtney Cronin accurately pointed out in our last segment, conversation around Aaron Rodgers and will he, won't he with the Green Bay Packers buoyed us through a lot of this offseason. And as he reports, it seems like all is well and good there. So Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin are presented by Progressive Insurance. We're looking for something else to fill the void. And my, oh my, Texas and Oklahoma have stepped up to the plate really admirably, Courtney. Like, for the last week, it seems like they, and listen, we know Texas certainly has no qualms about being on center stage, so they have taken to this masterfully so far.
Oh, absolutely. They have kind of come barreling in here with, this is going to maybe happen to, here's our letter. Please let us in 2025. And, I mean, the college sports world just gets flipped up on the side of its head just before training camp start for college football programs across the country, and this is the biggest story, and it's going to continue to be the biggest story until they're formally added to the SEC, which is going to be the next couple of years. We're still going to be talking about this and what this does to the Big 12, what this does to the level of competition in the SEC, what this does to recruiting, because when I think of Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, I also think about Nick Saban and how many recruits he's poached out of the state of Texas and poached out of the state of Oklahoma to play there and what that does to the overall landscape. So they're the gift that keeps – it is the conference that keeps on giving. You know, it just means more. You know, it just really just means more.
It
and that's why I think
even more now. Yes, I say it means even more now. We've added to that because, as Courtney just mentioned, and I saw this according to Heather Dinich, our ESPN senior writer, Oklahoma and Texas have officially notified the SEC they are seeking, quote, an invitation for membership beginning July 1st, 2025, according to a joint statement from the former Big 12 programs, or I guess still current here, but according to the release, OU and Texas sent to SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey their request on Tuesday morning. And Courtney, you're right. This is about a lot of things, but mostly money. Like, this is really what it comes down to. Recruiting certainly going to be a part of it, but a lot of institutions that already make a lot of money looked at this and said, we got a chance to make even more in this spot. There's a lot of things in this that I'm looking forward to. How Texas, a program that has an outsized sense of self relative to its recent success, who's been used to being able to play bully ball with that reputation in the Big 12, now having to go and realize they are just like everybody else in the Southeastern Conference, is going to be fascinating to watch play out in real time. But we are talking about 2025 in that statement. Paul Feinbaum, the host of the Paul Feinbaum Show, was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning and said, we may not have to wait that long.
It's possible it could happen next year because this thing is going to dissolve. And listen, we've all been there before, whether it was dating in high school or working at a job where no one wants you. You don't want to be in an environment, no matter what's at stake, and it's detrimental to every side. So I think they'll find a way, and usually money is going to ameliorate the bad feelings. So it's entirely possible Texas and Oklahoma could be in the SEC a year from now, which is just mind-boggling considering where we were, Jordan, a week ago when almost nobody knew about this story other than the commissioner of the SEC and the presidents of Texas and Oklahoma.
Chenan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Courtney, I think that's going to be the biggest determining factor from what happens here on out, is how quickly this timeline does ramp up. Because when we talk about what happens next, all those dominoes that hang in the balance, will the Big 12 be able to hold on and add teams? Will one of the Group of Five conferences, like the American, potentially go out there and start to try and fill out its roster to make sure it showed up? Or will Notre Dame ever have to make a decision here? I saw Heather Dinich tweet that Notre Dame at this point is still very happy with where they're at. I think all that is much more predicated on how soon this move takes place, that these teams can all start to get their ducks in a row and these athletic departments can kind of plot a course for the future.
Right, and that June 30th, 2025 date is what it is, because that's when both of their media rights in the Big 12 expire. That doesn't mean that that like prevents them from leaving before that, because they'd have to pay a penalty of $75 to $80 million to break that agreement. I think Texas could literally write that check today and be like, here you go, let's go right now. I mean, they have their own network. Like, let's think about this. The money thing should not be the issue, but what Paul Feinbaum was saying is, if you've got two schools that don't want to be there and you see this thing getting toxic and getting ugly for the student athletes, for the overall brand of your conference, I think that you might actually work something out in the meantime to have a more clean split than having this drag out. And you know, there is a lot of money involved here and there's a lot of money to be earned in the process. But I do think that that's something that might come to fruition a little bit sooner rather than later. But just mind-boggling to think about where you and I were on this show a week ago, and this thing was just starting to come out, and like, wow, this could really happen, to today where I was like, wow, this is really happening.
It's remarkable the severity that this has taken as quickly as it has through all of this. And you know what? It's I'm glad you brought up what this effect has on the athletes involved in all this. Because, you know, as much as we've talked about some of the gains in rights for college players' voices being more heard, this isn't like a union situation where any of them were consulted on this. And so you're right, they're probably going to have to take some of the heat during this process at some point for a decision that wasn't theirs through all of this. Although I'd have to say for the student athletes or the players at Texas here, they're probably used to far worse from their fans after the Eyes of Texas ordeal from last summer. And so this might be a welcome respite for it to be about something that's far less personal than the arrows they already took through that process here. So that fan base, I'm telling you, Courtney, in all of this, we know it's going to have far-reaching effects on college football. I am just fascinated to watch that Texas fan base have to walk into the SEC where no one in that conference is going to look at them as bigger or more important than any of the other schools there who also carry massive egos to these conversations.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they get to finally have a level playing field, right? Where you've got Alabama, you've got other powers in the SEC East, like Florida and Georgia, and even in, you know, other places throughout the conference, you know, on the up and up. Now they've got to be back in the same division with Texas A&M. How do they feel about that? Fighting for recruits.
Well, we know how Texas A&M feels about it, and spoiler alert, it's not very good here. Wanting to have your own identity did not work out very well for Texas A&M when that
identity was... Maybe they'll go back to the Big 12. Why not?
Ooh, see, there we go.
Swap.
Rosh Bajork, Zig where they think you're going to zag and get ready and save the Big 12. What a plot twist that would be. Courtney Cronin has solving the problems here for the Big 12 and for Texas A&M. 888-729-3776. If you want to get in touch with us, 888-SAY-ESPN. Coming up next, though, we'll take a look back at the case of Simone Biles withdrawing from the team event in the Olympics next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.